Hello, everyone. I'm Drew.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. I'm Bailey.
I got a nap in today, so I'm pretty well rested.
She's recharged.
Any business since the last time we spoke?
I don't think so.
Yep, because we spoke yesterday.
Yes.
I had parent conferences today.
It did rain.
Right, it did. Yeah.
Finally. We might get snow showers tomorrow.
What?
Yeah, nothing that's gonna stick because it's been too warm, but I don't know about where you're at. We're supposed to get literally just like a covering.
We have coated. A fucking marathon tomorrow. It better not fucking snow.
Don't take our snow then. I'm so excited. We had very different reactions to hearing it might snow tomorrow.
We also had different reactions to the thing that Drew told us before.
That's fair. We're covering a spectrum of reactions today.
This is why we work so well together.
Yeah.
One is sour and the other one is sweet.
One of my vocab words today was capricious, and I used the Sour Patch Kids as my example.
Oh.
It's us. We're capricious.
Rain/snow? What the fuck?
That's right. It won't do anything. It's been too warm and the ground's warm. It'll just look nice. Coming down for probably 2 minutes. Yeah, so nice.
Get the fuck out of here, Lacey.
Too late.
Changing avenues. I set up a holiday special for our Patreon.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah, so starting Thanksgiving morning and going until the first of the new year, 50% off for the first month.
Ah,
it's exciting. It's like a Black Friday sale.
Exactly, but it's a holiday sale because it's going for the whole holiday season.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah, I mean, our Patreon membership is already pretty cheap, so it's a pretty good deal.
Listen to us for cheaper.
Mm-hmm. And watch us for cheaper.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. They're already listening to us for the cheapest amount right now.
Yeah, if they're hearing this watch right now, they're listening pretty cheap.
We appreciate you listening. Now watch us for cheap.
But don't we release episodes early sometimes?
Yes. So, for example, our listeners are hearing this episode a week after the first one. Our Patreons are capable of watching it right after the other one.
Nice, mm-hmm. Nice.
So,
and we've had a couple like Patreon exclusive episodes. Not many, but we got a couple.
No, yeah. I feel like if we had more, we would make more, you know what I mean?
We also all work like full-time jobs, so
yeah. And but I mean, we are going to be having some fun over the holidays and making videos and stuff, so
can't wait for Thanksgiving.
Love Thanksgiving.
I can.
Me too. Why?
Because I work.
Okay.
I'm like, it's my favorite holiday, and I work Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Yeah, of course. You have to do a Thanksgiving weekend, I guess.
Yeah.
You get to see me.
Yeah.
You know what? Screw you. I got a shift covered. I'll take it back.
It's very annoying because it's like the daycare is closed Thursday and Friday. So Lewis, he has off work Thursday into Friday, but he has to work Wednesday into Thursday. So he's not going to get to really sleep much because I leave to go to work. And then Friday into Saturday, he's not going to be able to get much sleep before that shift. because the daycare is closed and I have to go into work. So it's just really annoying.
Yeah.
But we can talk more about that later.
Adulting is fun.
Are you guys ready to jump back in?
I am ready.
Okay.
I guess. You left us on a really rude cliffhanger before, so.
That I did. So,
I'm worried.
Betsy Faria was found murdered, stabbed 55 times on December 27th, 2011. She had gone to her chemotherapy appointment that day and was driven home by her friend Pam Hupp. Pam and Betsy had worked together for about a decade, and according to Pam, they were BFF. But evidence suggests otherwise. For example, apparently, when Betsy would be texting with her husband, she'd refer to Pam by her full name. Which, to me, indicates that they're not that close.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I used your full name when telling Brandon about you.
I often forget your new name because I have never really needed to use it.
Well, Drew's name now is so long because she's hyphenated, so.
Yeah, that's mostly why.
I mean, yours too, Bill.
Yeah, but my, like, married name is shorter than yours.
By a letter.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, but my first name is longer than yours.
Yeah.
So many of those letters are the same.
But their friendship, it makes it like, you know, like the TikTok voiceover that's like, yeah, like I'm definitely like your best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it's that type of relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Betsy was found by her husband Russ, and when we left off, Russ had just been convicted of her murder almost 2 years later, despite having a solid alibi and no physical evidence. Pam, who had no alibi and was the beneficiary of her life insurance policy, was never considered by police to be a suspect.
So stupid.
But, Drew, you're forgetting that Russ had the help of his friends that he played fantasy games with, and that it was a real-life role-playing game.
The ultimate role-play.
And who were never charged with anything afterwards, even though they were all part of a...
They were only a little bit guilty.
I mean, we're just going to pursue everyone that doesn't, like, assist with a crime now?
That would be so crazy.
The jails are
Imagine free. The tax dollars, Lacey.
Too many dollars.
So, let's jump in and pick up where we left off. Because if you thought the beginning was kind of like bananas,
shit,
we're about to get like crazy. Okay,
I don't like this episode.
So,
damn.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was like, this is a picture of Pam, but Lacey was like, but look what I did. Ready?
Yeah. Nice transition. Oh, wait.
Oh, it froze. Oh, no, there it is.
That's not Pam.
No, I covered her up with Betsy.
Oh, okay. Oh. Oh, you're trying to trick us. Like, no. I could see that's not Pam by her face.
That's Betsy. I covered her up because screw Pam. She's not important.
Yeah. Good help, Pam.
So as soon Fuck as
off, Russ Pam.
Was... Yeah.
So as soon as Russ was convicted. Hold on. Oh, dear. Okay. So as soon as Russ was convicted, Joel Schwartz, you may remember, he is he's a defense attorney, got to work on an appeal. Shortly after he filed his appeal in 2014, he found out that Betsy's daughters were actually suing Pam Hupp for Betsy's life insurance money.
Good. Wasn't she supposed to make a trust?
Yes. So if you remember the timeline of the trust... She set it up a week before Russ's trial.
Right.
And the reasoning is because her mom died a month before. And she was just so busy for those 10 months prior.
So busy.
Or a year and 10 months, because it took 2 years for the trial.
Did she kill her mom?
Pam.
Because even though she'd set the trust up, they had not received any money.
Shocking.
It was actually later discovered that there's a video of the lead investigator, Detective Ryan McCarrick, telling Pam that it would look better if she set the trust up before the trial against Russ began. So Pam set it up a week before.
I'm sick of everybody except for Joel.
She put $100,000 into the trust, but a few weeks after the trial, she emptied it out and revoked the trust.
What an absolute...
That doesn't look sketchy at all. So also, wasn't the full life insurance $150,000?
Yeah.
Well, she has to keep some.
Okay.
So Schwartz found out about all of this because during the deposition of the civil suit, Pam had to explain it all to attorney David Bush, who called Schwartz and was like, yo, something fishy here, man. Like, are you looking into this? So after receiving the call, Schwartz started working on a Mooney motion. Sounds cool, doesn't it? A Mooney motion informs the court that there's new evidence for a judge to consider that might change the previous verdict. The initial motion for a new trial was rejected by Judge Christina Menemeyer. She was the one who presided over the original case, the trial. She was the one who was like, you can't mention anything about Pam. And if you want to talk to Pam, the jury's going to be out of the room. So Joel Schwartz filed his Mooney motion, and it was granted. It was actually the fourth one in the state that's ever been granted. Isn't that exciting?
It's exciting.
So on February 24th, 2015, the Missouri Court of Appeals sent the case back to the 45th Judicial Court Judge Christina Kunza Menemeyer for a hearing on a retrial motion. In March, Judge Chris, because I don't like her name, Judge Chris recused herself due to a known conflict. She didn't specify and she refused to comment.
Seems so Judge, sketchy.
Yeah. So Judge Stephen Omer was appointed to take over the case. He ordered the new trial set for November 2nd, 2015. Prosecutor Leah Askey was less than pleased, describing the decision as despicable.
All right.
Another person who was less than pleased was Pam. When word of the retrial got to her, she suddenly started having flashbacks and memories. Do you remember how she had that very vague memory medical condition?
Yeah, she had a doctor's note.
Yes. Well, I guess, like, the idea that Russ might be getting a fair trial, like, messed with her mind, and she started remembering things.
Mm.
So, around June 2015, Pam went to the police and told them she had a secret. She kept it from them in 2011, but she needed to tell them now. Are you ready for her secret?
Yes, I'm so excited. Okay.
Do you think she, like, confessed to murder?
No.
That's what her secret was. Her secret was, never. She said that Betsy was just, or sorry, she told them that she and Betsy had a sexual relationship.
I wish somebody would just punch Pam in the face.
She said, it gets worse. She said Betsy was just so in love with Pam, but Pam was not a lesbian. But because Betsy was dying, she felt bad and thought it was a small thing to give her.
She threw her a sexy bone.
Mm. Pam told investigators that in those intimate moments, she replaced what a husband would be.
Mm.
The investigators.
I'm putting out a hit on Pam.
The investigators were really touched that Pam would make such a sacrifice for a dying friend, and they called her a problem solver.
What?
Like, in real life?
They said, quote, well, that's the problem solver in you.
Are they pandering to her right now, or are they still like sucking her dick a little bit?
Team Pam.
Oh my god, that's the problem solver in you.
Yeah. Did everyone forget that Pam clearly had sex with her husband at least 3 days before she died? Or Betsy, sorry.
Betsy.
Like, also, let's throw this out there just for the fun of it. Let's say that Pam was a male friend of Betsy's, and it was like, you know what? I had sex with Betsy because she was dying. Would the investigators be like, you're a problem solver? You're such a go-getter.
It would be him being looked at.
Yeah, they would be like, maybe I should have looked at you a little bit closer there, bud.
I'm suspicious of this behavior.
Yeah. If Pam was a Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Pam. So sick of Pam. I'm so sick of Pam. We just got started this episode.
Pam told the police. Oh, Lacey, it's gonna get worse.
Oh my God.
I believe you.
And just in this interview, it's gonna get worse. Okay? But then later on, it gets much worse too. Anyway, Pam told the police that one night, Russ came home and found her and Betsy together. And he flipped out.
Solving problems.
He grabbed Pam and shoved her up against a wall and told her that if she ever came to their house again, it'd be the last time. And I have a quote, and it makes me feel icky. I'll read it.
No, thank you.
But just know that I feel icky about it, okay?
Yes. Okay.
She told the police that this is what Russ told her. If you two fucking muff bumpers, if I ever catch you guys again, I'm going to bury you in the backyard.
If I ever catch you bumping muffs again.
Stop.
I'm going to start calling people muff bumpers. I don't actually know how well that would go over.
I don't think well.
In public.
I would, no. I don't think you should.
I don't think we would hang out anymore.
I'll keep it an episode exclusive word.
When asked why Pam hadn't told them before, guess what Pam said?
Did she forget?
She forgot.
What a handy little medical condition.
Yeah. What's funny is that even though the cops believed her, all her acquaintances described her as being the most homophobic person they had ever met. So they did not believe a word of that story.
That's why she had muff bumpers in her repertoire ready to throw out there. Yeah, so that's why I can't use it.
Yeah. So now Pam was trying to spin it to say that Betsy was planning on leaving Russ, and Russ killed her to prevent that. But Betsy's friend Bobby, the one that used to babysit her, she told authorities that Betsy wanted to move with Russ to Betsy's parents' home. I think to be closer to the chemotherapy appointments. But like, if you were going to leave your husband, why would you be planning to move with him?
Yeah.
But remember, nothing can stop Pam. Not even inconsistencies in the stories. So
she's got that medical condition.
Yes. Speaking of which, in October 2015, Pam remembered another memory. So back to 4 years ago when she had dropped Betsy off at home. Just remembered. Russ was sitting outside of the house in his car. He was with another man that she couldn't see very well, but it was definitely Russ, and he was definitely in their driveway.
Wild thing to forget.
And when Russ saw Pam looking at him, guess what he did?
Didn't want her to know he was sitting in his own driveway.
No, he ducked down in his seat, indicating guilt.
Well, he was with another man. They were probably muff bumping.
No, I don't think that was what she was implying. I think she was implying like they were teaming up to murder Betsy. But good one, Lacey.
Thank you. I can only use this episode, so I gotta make it fit it in where I can.
Oh god, we're gonna lose so many followers.
No. Say, there's more.
It's not Lacey's words. It's Pam Hupp's, and she's right, the worst. Right. So,
right.
I just like a quick little side note here. Originally, so like if God, it's just so stupid because she's like, my memory sucks. But like, when they originally interviewed her about Betsy, they specifically asked, "Did you see Russ that night?" And she said, "No."
Did they? I wonder, are they like filing her, all of her like witness stories, statements and everything correctly? Or are they just like losing them after they write them down?
I'm not sure. Being like, first of all, I don't know if they write anything down. And also, you have to remember, all of the cameras are broken. So,
all the cameras.
Can we call, like, the state police then? Like, because clearly they don't have resources enough to handle this case. If it makes
you feel any better, we're currently in 2015. Mm-hmm. So, things have changed. Don't worry. That's
supposed to make me feel better?
It should.
Okay.
So, of course, Joel Schwartz was hearing all of these news stories Pam was cooking up, and he was excited to question her and catch her in lies. Like, he was like,
"Ooh."
Good job, Joel.
I would be giddy like Joel too.
But
you think when the when the jury came back with their verdict the first time, he was like, "Are you fucking serious?"
Yeah, probably. I mean, I would be.
Yeah.
I will say that the jury, when they found out that they interviewed Pam and weren't allowed to hear what had happened, they were less than pleased.
Well, that's something, I guess.
Yeah, they were like, what the hell? Okay.
Sorry.
You're okay. Just...
God, you ruined her groove.
No, I
yeah,
totally
you
messed
ruined
up
my
her.
Groove.
Sure.
Throw her out a window.
You gotta catch me.
Oh. No.
No.
That old man in the movie wasn't caught. You can just be caught by some linen or something.
Okay, so. Let me back up. Because something very exciting is about to happen, and I want to have a good pace for it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just like come out of nowhere with it.
Gotcha.
So, Joel's excited to get Pam on the stand. He's ready to go.
I'm excited.
But then he becomes aware of something very interesting.
Very interesting.
Someone in the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office anonymously sent Joel 132 photos.
Oh.
Does that number sound familiar?
Yeah. They lost 132 photos of something.
So these 132 photos were taken of the crime scene, and they definitively proved that Russ was the only one capable of committing the murder.
Yes.
But they were unable to be developed because the camera was broken.
That's what it was. Oh, tell us about the pictures.
But someone sent them to Joel, indicating that they were developed, the camera wasn't broken, and they didn't show shit.
Ooh.
Go figure.
Schwartz received another anonymous tip. Somebody is really helping him.
It's the one person in the police department who's been listening to Pam's stories, and they're like, "Are you guys buying this?"
Yeah. It was an email between Lincoln County's Captain of Investigations, Mike Lang, and Lincoln County Prosecutor, Leah Askey. The email was romantic in nature.
Oh.
With them just professing their love for one another.
In their work email?
Well, no one would check their work email.
I don't know if that's specifically their work email, but it's certainly interesting because Lang was the one who never mapped out Russ's cell phone pinging towers. And he didn't get Pam's cell phone data. Like, he was the captain of investigations. And there didn't seem to be much of an investigation. It's interesting because what they did find as far as evidence really fit into the narrative that Leah was trying to spin for the jury. Sort of. She did pull a significant amount out of her ass.
Yeah.
What? Not Leah.
So November 2015 finally came. Russ waived his right to a trial by jury and opted for a bench trial. He said the jury last time, no good.
Yeah.
I mean, they were confused. So
they were confused and they were making up their own storyline in their head.
That's fair.
Don't blame him.
Prosecutor Leah tried again to get a ruling to suppress any evidence about Pam because, quote, she had no direct connection to the case. I disagree. No, but
she did. She was the last to see her alive. Like,
she also was the beneficiary of her life insurance policy, which, and I also think that it gets kind of like swept under the rug because there's so much on top
bullshit.
Of the rug.
Yeah.
They changed her life insurance policy on the 23rd. And she was murdered on the 27th. Red flags.
Yeah. Also, you know, she should for sure be included in the trial because she had come out and said, oh yeah, I saw Russ in the driveway day of. Like, you're also just bringing yourself out as a witness.
Also, she'd witnessed him being, like, aggressive before and threatening.
But I know why Leah, I know why Leah doesn't want her to get in trouble.
Because she can't keep a story straight?
No, they're bumping muffs.
Lacey. That was the last one.
Okay.
I think you've hit your limit.
Lacey. Yeah. She said that she only did it for Betsy because she was dying.
And also...
That's true. It was a sympathy.
Leah is clearly having a fling with the captain of investigations.
Yeah, well, Pam had a husband.
Fair. So Judge Omer, the new judge, unlike... Judge Chris was like, shut the fuck up, Leah. Like, like, that's not what he said, but in my head, I like to imagine him being like, stop. Like,
I feel like that was the undertone of what he wanted to say.
Yeah. He just denied her motion to suppress the evidence. So during the trial, Joel called Detective Merkel to the stand. Merkel. And I don't know if you remember, Detective Mike Merkel testified in Russ's first trial that officers took pictures to prove that there was blood all over the place, but then nothing developed because the police camera was broken.
Oh, bummer.
So tax during dollars. The second trial, Joel handed Mike the pile of 132 photos. Mike was shocked, and Leah Askey said to Joel, where did you get those?
Interesting. How do you know what they are, Leah?
Right?
And why does it even matter where he got them? He found evidence that you said didn't exist.
Yeah, well...
And that you said was a whole different piece of evidence.
Also on the stand was a crime scene technician. She had worked the Faria case, and she confirmed that there was no evidence of a cleanup. She also testified that the blood on the lights...
Yeah.
The light switch appeared to be made by a bloody towel based on the textures in the bloodstain. So it looked like someone was using a bloody towel to wipe fingerprints off of the light switch.
Hmm.
Now, if it was your house and it was your master bedroom, wouldn't you expect that your fingerprints would be on the light switch?
Yeah, I feel like, you why can would reason you why you stick your fingerprints anywhere in your house and not have to hide them.
But I will say, like, I feel like that's...
Speculative?
No, I feel like even, like, if it is my house, like, people are just like, oh, like, I need to, like, take the fingerprints off. They're not even thinking of, like, oh, it's my house. There's going to be my fingerprints everywhere. Like, it doesn't matter. But I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like in this case, Russ had a lot going on. He needed to get dressed. If you recall, he was naked during the murder.
But he was wearing slippers.
True. He needed to hide his slippers. He needed to hide his slippers. He needed to put the dog outside. He needed to clean up the big bloody mess that was everywhere. I don't know if his like next thought would have been like, better get those fingerprints.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she also testified that Russ's slippers looked to have been dipped in blood. Like,
Interesting.
there was no blood on the bottom, indicating he wasn't walking around in them. And there was no, it wasn't splatter. It looked like maybe there was like a puddle on the floor and someone just kind of like dipped it into the puddle.
Offense, but where was this crime scene
Right?
technician in the first fucking trial?
Yeah.
Well, so I wonder if there was a bit of like intimidation or something. Because like she would have been on the stand directly contradicting what the detective had just said about how there was blood everywhere and the photos didn't develop. She would have gone up and been like, there was blood nowhere. I wonder, that's my defense for
Yeah.
her. The next piece of new evidence at the second trial was the document that Pam had been so insistent on before. Do you remember that one?
Oh, it was when Betsy was saying that Russ held a pillow over her head or something.
That's the one, yes. The police had finally found it.
Do you mean they
And it
forged it?
was basically,
Do you mean that they finally forged it?
No, they found it.
Oh, okay.
It was basically word for word what Pam had said. So I have a picture of it, and you can read it if you'd like. But here's a little quote from it. I really do feel that Russ is going to do something to me. He continued to tell me how much money he would make after I die last night was the worst. And I fell asleep on the couch while watching TV. I woke up to Russ holding a pillow over my face. He said that he wanted me to know what dying feels like. I need to change my life insurance. Do you think I can put your name and you can help my daughters when they needed it? It's something, if something happens to me, would you please show this to the police? Are you reading it, Lacey?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you
Didn't
like?
she like forget about it at first?
No, she didn't forget about it. She just called it, she kept calling it a document, and then at one point she was like, you have to find that email. And then she was like, I mean, document. I don't
I
really
like that.
know what the
This is.
significance of it being a document versus an email, because
Or
it's
more
clearly addressed
official.
to Pam, so it's meant to be sent to Pam. And she said, please show it to the police. Like,
I like that this whole letter is supposed to be her being like, I'm afraid that something's going to happen to me and it's going to be arrest. And at no point does Betsy say, like, help me or I don't know how to get out or anything. It's just like, I'm afraid Russ is going to kill me. Take care of my kids when I'm gone and let me give you my money.
yeah, Lacey.
It's
What else
really
is she supposed
too
to
late for
say?
me, Pam, but I want to make sure you're set.
So,
Lacey,
honestly,
Pam's her lover. She has to make sure that she's set.
Yeah. Doesn't want her to forget about her when she's gone.
So on the surface, it doesn't look good for us. But with Pam originally calling it an email and then quickly changing her wording, they looked a little bit deeper. And what they found was that the document was written in Word 97, software that had not been installed on the laptop.
Oh, good grief.
And it was the only document on that laptop with an unknown author.
Oh, boy.
So it seemed that someone wrote part of this email on their own computer, then finished it on Betsy's.
I can't believe they actually even looked into it. Since Pam gave it to them, I cannot believe that they weren't just like, oh my God, Pam, thank you.
Well, at this point, they're starting to get a little bit less on Team Pam.
Finally.
Yes, they were able to find that Betsy's laptop had previously been connected to a Wi-Fi called the Club on a day when Betsy was playing tennis. So she was playing tennis at the club. And on that specific day, guess who was, hanging out watching Betsy play tennis?
Was it Pam?
It was Pam. So
I mean, Pam goes everywhere that she goes, so that makes sense.
True. So she was probably like, hey, Betts, can I borrow your laptop while you're playing some tennis?
Is that how she talks?
I don't know. She's from Missouri. I don't know how they speak. I feel like that could have been a little offensive. I apologize to our Missouri listeners.
I'm on a roll today.
It's no worse than what Lacey has been saying.
She gave me a new phrase, and I just thought it was so funny.
Keep it to all your students.
There's no hate here. No. No, we're still coming off of Hawk Tua. They don't need anything new.
Oh, my God. Still?
It's been a year, and we're in November.
So, also, there were cookies on Betsy's laptop that showed she'd searched for her own signature.
Sometimes I forget mine, too.
Yeah, but, like, I didn't think that you could Google, like, what does my signature look like? Or, like, Drew signature. Like, I didn't know that you could do that. I don't think Google would pull that up. Luckily, the cookies blocked the search, which might be why there's no signature on that document.
I like that she couldn't find the signature, so instead of just, like, going into another email from Betsy and seeing what the signature looked like and making it, she was like, well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Not tech savvy, our Pam.
So at the trial, Schwartz brought up the email between Mike Lang and Leah Askey and suggested that Mike intentionally ignored evidence or didn't investigate leads as a way to, like, help Leah's case. In response, Leah claimed the emails were doctored, much like the email from Betsy to Pam was doctored.
Everybody's a victim here.
Yes. After hearing all the new evidence on November 6th, 2015, Judge Stephen Omer made his decision and Russ was acquitted.
Oh, yes.
Judge Omer remarked that the investigation was rather disturbing.
Or rather?
Yeah. Well, he's a judge. He can't be like, you guys suck.
I mean, he could say something a little bit stronger.
The following year.
Here.
So in 2016, Russ sued the prosecutor and the detectives on the case for fabricating evidence, ignoring exonerating evidence, and failing to investigate other suspects.
Okay. I would agree with that.
Yeah. A judge dismissed his suit against the prosecutor on the basis of prosecutorial immunity.
Oh my God.
But in March,
I feel like that's only supposed to cover so much.
But in March 2020, Russ was awarded $2 million as a settlement against the detectives.
Nice.
So back to 2016. That was a nice little jump ahead, but we're going to go back because we are not done this shit sandwich.
Thank fucking God.
Schwartz was not done at this point. Yes, got him out. But Pam Hopp was still walking around. Nobody liked that.
Nobody likes it.
So, Schwartz, as well as Russ, thought maybe, you know, investigators should look at Pam. Because, you know, at this point, now there is no one in jail for Betsy's murder. If they're looking for suspects, they were like, hey, Pam Hopp.
Why don't you look at the person that's been giving you all different kinds of stories?
Oh, that batshit crazy lady. Look at her.
Remember that one?
So Schwartz contacted the U.S. Attorney's Office and requested they review the case. So while that's happening, here's where we get to the meat of the shit sandwich.
Ooh.
On August 16th, 2016, Pam, who at this time was 60 years old, called 911 asking for police to come to her home right away because a man was breaking into her house. Pam actually made two calls to 911. The first one, she was running into the house, and the second, she said the man was running towards her.
Oh no.
She barricaded herself in her bedroom. Then the operator heard five gunshots.
I fucking knew it.
What did you know?
When I assumed she was setting up the call so she could shoot somebody and claim self-defense.
Oh, I wanted you
That's
to
what
think
I
that
feel
Pam
that
would
I
have did.
know.
Pam told the operator she'd shot the man as he was coming toward her. The operator asked if Pam knew the man. She said no. Police arrived at Pam's house in O'Fallon, Missouri, to find an unidentified man lying on the floor outside Pam's bedroom. He had no ID, but he did have a plastic bag with $900 cash, a pen, and a handwritten note that read, "Kidnap Hup, get Russ's money from Hup at her bank, and kill Hup." It's good to have your instructions laid out. So
Yeah.
the
Sometimes I
note,
forget them.
it's I have a to-do list.
Yeah.
I have it on my phone, but some people like to write it down. The note had more instructions, reading, "Take Hup back to the house. Take Pam to Woodpile behind Russ's house and get rid of her. Make it look like Russ's wife. Make sure knife sticking out of neck. In return for a reward of $10,000." So he also had like a contract in his pocket too.
It's like a job listing.
The police asked Pam to go to the station with them to make a statement. There, she told the police that she'd been out shopping earlier in the day. Okay. Pay attention because it's one of those wild Pam stories.
I love
She'd
that.
been out shopping earlier in the day. Then she was pulling into her driveway, and at the same time, a silver car pulled up and a man got out from the passenger side. Once out, the car drove off. The man, whom was left behind, got into Pam's car wielding a knife. Inside her car, he said that he needed to get Russ's money. And while he said it, he was looking back over his shoulder. At that moment, Pam said she was able to knock the knife out of his hand and run inside to call 911.
Wasn't able to just lock her car doors to keep him from getting in the car,
No.
but
Or,
was
she
able
was.
to knock the knife away from him.
She also wasn't able to run into her house and lock the door behind her.
Yeah.
He was fast, but he
You
was.
just.
Yeah.
Pam ran to her bedroom and grabbed her gun for protection. The man, according to Pam, came inside, knife in hand, and started making his way toward her. So she pulled the trigger. The police were like, "What do you think this was all about? Like, why would he do this, Pam? N There's no reason. Everybody loves you."
Do they?
She was like, she thought the man was looking for Betsy's insurance money. She was like, "You know what? I think he was after my money." And I watched a bit of the interview. I had to turn it off because I can only take so much, Pam. She was just like, "And it's not even like that much money. Like, it's $150,000. Like, do you know how fast that gets used up? Like that. Like, I just bought a new car and it was $30,000. Like, it just goes right out the door. It's not even that much money. Not nowadays."
Go to hell, Pam.
You know who would have liked that money? Her fucking daughters.
Her family. People who
Yeah.
actually loved Betsy probably would have liked that money for her funeral.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you're picking up what Pam had just put down on the
No.
table. In her little story, Russ had hired a hitman to get the money from Pam. So while some investigators were talking to Pam, others were trying to figure out who this dead man was. They were able to identify him through his fingerprints. He was Louis Gumpenberger, a 33-year-old who lo his loved ones described as being the funniest guy who enjoyed making others laugh. Lewis was the father of two children, and he and his children's mother worked really well together as co-parents. He lived with his mother, Margaret, and she had actually reported him missing after he missed a job interview that morning. She also noticed that he'd left his wallet and cigarettes at home. When police told Margaret what had happened and what Pam was saying, Margaret was appalled. They were like, hey, it looks like he broke into this house. Margaret was like, fuck no. She said there is no way Pam's story was at all accurate because Lewis had sustained a traumatic head injury in 2005 as a result of a car accident. As a result, Lewis couldn't hold a spoon, is what Mom said.
Oh.
She said he had trouble walking, running, and talking.
It was bad enough that she had somehow manipulated somebody into coming in her house so she could kill them. Now it's a guy with a TBI who can't even walk straight.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of Pam.
It's all the adrenaline. He was able to run straight then.
I'm so sick of
Pam. There's a recording
of her
phone call to 911. I would like to play it for you guys.
Yes.
Can I opt out?
No,
I think it's really good. I think it's going to be very entertaining for you.
Oh my god. Fucking hate this woman so much.
Yeah, a lot of people do. I'm just going to skip this warning.
Except.
Hello, there's someone broken in my house. Where's your emergency? Hey, hello, there's someone broken in my house. Help!
What's the address you're at?
Woman, you want me to get your wife?
No, I'm not getting in the car with you. No,
what's the address?
Get up, get out. Get out! Help!
Pam, what's the address you're at?
Help!
Why is somebody breaking into?
No! No!
Hello?
I do like that the operator seems to get really annoyed with Pam, too.
Help!
Ma'am, can you hear me?
Help!
What's the address you're at? Hello.
Those are the fire alarms going off because she's fired up.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Where are you at?
I'm an intruder in my house.
Where are you at? Who broke into your home?
I don't know. A man! Help!
Where is he at right now?
I'm going outside.
The fire alarms are going off too.
Turn off!
Is he inside?
Yes!
Is he a white male, a black male?
He's white! Hurry! He tried to get me in my car and I ran into the house.
He tried to take you into his car?
He tried to take me in my car! Help! Hurry! Okay. Please, somebody!
Have officers on the way, ma'am. Where are you at right now in the home?
I'm in the garage. You're in the garage? My car. He's still in the house.
Okay, can you run to a neighbor's house?
I don't think there's anybody home now. I'm staying here. I have my dog. I have my puppy.
You have your puppy with you?
Yes.
You have no idea who the subject is?
No.
Are there any weapons in the home?
Yes, there's a gun on my bed. I shot him.
There's a gun on your bed? You shot him?
Yes, I shot him. He tried to get in my bedroom after me, and I shot him.
That was
there's
Kat.
A gun in the home. She said
not
she shot him.
In the video.
Is he still, as far as you know, is he still in your room?
No, he's in the hallway.
He's in the hallway? Is he moving?
Is he hallway? No, he's not moving.
Not moving?
Oh, hurry!
Okay.
Hurry.
Ma'am, we already have help on the way. Just stay on the line with me.
So, I'm just going to stop it there because the last 2 minutes are her just keep going, help, hurry! And the operator's like, they're on the fucking way. Settle down. Like...
The first of all, how she answers the phone, the like, hi, yeah, hello.
Yeah. She doesn't sound scared.
No.
Until she's in the garage.
Yeah.
And then she seems more panicked. But like
Sorry, go ahead.
Because the way I see it, she didn't want to sound too panicked when Lewis was still alive, because then he might be like, oh, am I not, should I go? Like, this isn't going how I guess it was supposed to go?
Yeah.
So, then I also notice that, like, she waited a long time to say that she shot him.
Yeah. It was a while after we heard the gunshots.
Yeah, like, as soon as I shot them, I'd be like, I shot him, they're down.
Yeah. Also, how many times did she shoot him?
5 times.
Jeez.
The first 3 aren't good enough, and then she had to do the double tap.
She emptied her clip into him.
Ooh, like she's got a cat in front of her.
Yeah. Also, I like that the operator was like, can you go to a neighbor's house? And she was like, nobody's home. If you were really in fear. She probably was like,
my neighbors hate me.
Like, well, I know that we've covered cases where people have been like running from door to door looking for help.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to. She was good just like chilling in her garage. She does mention later in the video that her garage door is open so she can leave. She's not like trapped in the garage. But also, like, she knows that she shot him 5 times.
Right.
Why are you so scared now?
And she said that he was down and he wasn't moving, so why are you still screaming for help?
Yeah. And also, if you didn't think that he was dead, why would you leave your gun in the bedroom?
Because it's empty.
I knew you were going to say that. If it's empty, still, it can be used as a weapon. And even if it's empty, he doesn't know it's empty. I'm just saying, if you were that desperate, like in TV shows, when people shoot somebody, somebody else usually has to come and grab the gun away, right? So like, easy, easy. And they take the gun. She was just like, boom, boom, boom. All right, put it down. Run to the garage. Anyway. So at this time, the police were just like, what the fuck is going on here? So then they received a very interesting call.
Ooh.
We're getting a lot of interesting things here. Okay. Sebastian needs to not purr into the mic.
Just jump down.
They received a call from the St. Charles County Police. They said that they had gotten an incident report 4 months ago from a woman named Carol Alford, and they believe the two incidents may be related.
Mm.
Carol Alford was outside of her house with her dog one day when a woman in a black SUV pulled up to talk to her. The woman asked if Carol babysat. Confused, Carol responded, nah, bitch. No, I don't do that. What? The woman in the SUV apologized, then introduced herself as a Dateline producer. She told Carol that they were in need of somebody to record a soundbite for their show, a reenactment of a 911 call. The woman offered Carol $1,000 cash to do the soundbite. Carol was suspicious, to say the least, but she was also worried about the kids in the neighborhood because of the woman's babysitting comment. She was like, what? Why is this woman looking for like people with kids? So she decided to do some undercover investigating. She told the lady to hold on. She put her dog inside. She hid a pocket knife up her sleeve, and she dialed 911 on her phone. She didn't hit send. She just like had the numbers in the phone. And then she hopped into the SUV with the woman, which
risky
hindsight, not a great idea, but. It is what it is. The blonde woman told Carol that they were going to a house the production team had rented for the show. The woman told Carol the area where the house was located, and Carol felt the hairs on the back of her neck stand up. She knew the area this woman was talking about, and she knew that there were no houses in that area. So she was like, this isn't good, and started trying to figure out a way to get out of the car. That's when she realized that she actually wasn't wearing shoes. So Carol asked the lady to turn around so she could grab some shoes. The woman was like, nah, you don't need shoes. But Carol insisted and added that she'd forgotten to lock her door. She promised the woman that she'd do the soundbite after, but she really needed to go back to her house. So the woman turned around, and Carol went inside to grab shoes and lock her door. The whole time thinking that she's so glad that she has a security camera, because it was getting a good look at the car, it was getting a good look at the person in the car, and it was getting a good look of that license plate right there. So she was like, if this woman ends up kidnapping me, check the tapes. So she goes back out to the black SUV, but this time she's pretending to be on the phone. She tells the lady that she's sorry, but her son's school called and her son is sick, so she has to go and get him. The woman tried to argue and was like, we'll be super quick. Like, come on. It's $1,000 real quick. Come on. Then she like glances up and she says to Carol, oh, you have security cameras? And then she leans back in her car and drives off. Not suspicious at all.
Doesn't seem sketchy at all.
So Carol called 911 and reported the incident. So the St. Charles County Police told the O'Fallon Police Department this report and sent them the security footage. First thing they noticed was that the producer in the black SUV looked a whole lot like Pam Hupp.
That's right.
Weird.
Yeah. Also, here's a picture of Carol. Just, I have a picture of her. So, the second thing they discovered is that the license plate that Carol's camera grabbed was for a 2016 GMC Acadia, registered to a business owned by Pam and her husband. At the same time, police were able to match the serial numbers of four of the bills that were found in Lewis Gumpenberger's pocket. Four of those bills sequentially matched a $100 bill that Pam had.
Interesting.
So, like, Lewis had bills 1 through 4, and Pam had number 5. Like, what are the odds? So crazy.
Crazy.
Investigators also discovered the knife that Lewis had wielded was purchased by Pam. Mm. And the paper the instructions were written on, also purchased by Pam.
Dumb ho.
Train.
And the little nail in the coffin there, cell phone records showed Pam had been in Lewis's neighborhood, basically at his front door, less than an hour before he was supposedly broke into her home to kill her. And this isn't like hard evidence, but police found that Pam had placed a carpet swatch on the floor in her hallway, seemingly as an effort to protect the rug underneath from Lewis's blood.
Hmm.
She didn't want to stay in the carpet.
No.
So, reality. Russ did not hire a hitman. I know. Shocking. What happened was Pam picked up a stranger, unaware that he suffered from physical and mental impairments, then drove him to her house and staged the incident to make it look as if Lewis was a hitman hired by Russell Faria to come after her. But as evidenced by her interaction with Carol, she had been trying to do this for 4 months. Russ was released from prison in November, and Pam began this plot in April. She wasted, like, no time trying to get him back in jail. They told Russ about this whole situation and mentioned the note that they found in Lewis's pocket. Russ commented that he doesn't have a woodpile at his house, but his dad does. So Russ told his dad, and his dad spoke to his neighbors, and it turns out that several neighbors have security cameras. Ooh. What they caught on the camera was Pam basically scoping out the area. They caught her driving up and down the street a couple times. She's so sloppy.
So sloppy.
That doesn't sound like Pam.
I feel like her confidence is way high because she got away with so much bullshit before.
Yeah. So on August 23rd, 2016, Pam Hupp was arrested for first-degree murder and armed criminal action. She immediately requested a lawyer. They took her to the station and took her to the interrogation room. There, they read her her rights.
Did they sit real close to her? Oh, no, they didn't. That's they kept fucking distance. Annoying.
They read her her rights and had her initial beside each one, acknowledging that she understood. Then the officers left the room to contact her attorney. Left on the table was a bottle of water, a pen, and a pair of glasses. There's security footage of this. Because Pam slowly grabs the pen. I took a screenshot of it. Do you see the pen next to the water bottle?
Mm-hmm.
Like she was trying to like be very sneaky and act like she was just grabbing her water bottle, but also like grab the pen. Then she like starts acting like she's adjusting her shirt and her pants, but she's really slipping the pen into her jeans. A few minutes go by and Pam starts to like feel her neck, like she's trying to locate carotid artery.
You better not.
A few minutes go by, then Pam starts, or sorry, then she asks to go to use the bathroom.
Oh, I'm gonna be so mad.
A female officer escorts her to the bathroom, but Pam didn't need to pee. Instead, she stabbed herself in the neck and both wrists with the pen, presumably as a suicide attempt. She did not die.
Oh, thank God. Oh, I'd have been so mad.
But she got left with some pretty nasty scars.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she really went to town on herself. But she was placed on suicide watch at the jail, and her bail was set at $2 million because they assumed this was, like, you're guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it looks, like, horrendous and gross. But also, none of those wounds really look... It all looks very superficial. I'm not saying, like, I don't because think she's trying to do something, but I don't
think it was a pen.
I was going to say it was a pen, like.
It's a pen.
If it was a movie, she'd have jammed that pen right into her neck.
It's an odd choice.
Jeez. Yeah.
Doesn't she look really cute?
Happy?
She looks a little with crazy. Those
bandages. I'm going to make fun of her because she's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So, Detective Sergeant Brian Hilk was one of the detectives who brought Pam to the interrogation room. Following the incident, he said he would never forget his elevator ride with Pam on the way to the interview room. He said, quote, "As a police officer, you kind of get these weird feelings in the back of your neck. It's almost like a survival feeling. And I remember having the feeling someone was looking at my gun. I immediately turned around and she was staring at my gun." So if he hadn't turned around, do you think she would have grabbed the gun and tried to kill herself that way?
Yes, or shot him.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, he accosted me in the elevator.
In December 2016, Pam was indicted by a grand jury. On January 31st, 2017, Pam Hupp appeared in court and pleaded not guilty. In March, prosecutors announced that they'd be seeking the death penalty. And it was about this time when investigators started digging up more dirt on Pam. We're not done with Pam yet. So we're going to have to rewind a little bit, though. Okay? I feel like Bailey knows what's coming.
I don't know.
Pam's mother, Shirley.
Oh.
Died in October 2013.
Good catch,
if
Bailey.
If you recall, yes. Pam had told the court that the reason it took her so long to set up the trust fund for Betsy's daughters was because her mother just died. But before her death, during like one of the initial interviews with the police to talk about Betsy's murder, Pam had told investigators that she had no motive to kill Betsy. Because if she wanted life insurance money, her mother's policy was worth $500,000. She literally told the police, quote, "I really hate to say it. If I wanted money, my mom's worth $500,000. That I get when she dies. My mom has dementia and doesn't half the time know who we are. She's been living alone in a condo. And I know that sounds really morbid and stuff like that, but I am a life insurance person. If I really wanted the money, there was an easier way than trying to combat somebody else that's physically stronger than me. I'm just saying."
That's a good point.
She felt so confident.
It's worth noting that during that interview, she also mentioned that she had life insurance policies for her husband and son.
Horrifying.
Just being like, hey, I have all these other options.
There are so many other people I could kill to get
money. I have my mom, my son, and my husband. Why wouldn't I kill one of those people and go after some lady I barely know? Like, why would I kill a loved one over, you know? Why not?
I mean, Betsy was a loved one. They were having an affair.
You're right.
They certainly were.
So, Shirley Newman had been a widow since 2000. She had been living alone in a third floor apartment in the Lakeview Park Independent Senior Living Community. She was suffering from Alzheimer's and arthritis. On October 29th, 2013, she'd been released from the hospital for back pain and spent that night with Pam. The following day, Pam dropped her mom off at the apartment at around 5 p.m. On her way out, she told staff not to expect her for dinner or breakfast the following day. She explained that her mom was on medication for her back that made her very tired. At around 2:30 p.m. on October 31st, 2013, a staff member found Shirley's body in the grass below her third-story balcony. The balcony railing was damaged. Like, I mean, you guys can see the picture, but the listeners don't. The three poles were dented and two were broken off completely. An autopsy revealed blunt trauma to the chest, which, I mean, you could argue was from the fall, as well as 8 times the normal dose of the sedative Ambien in her system. They believed she'd had an accident while watering the flowers on her balcony, or maybe she just fell after accidentally taking too much of her medication. Her death was ruled an accident. Little side note.
What did she go to the hospital for? Back surgery or something?
No. She just had back pain.
So she's watering the plants while she... Okay.
But, so my thing is like, why does someone with Alzheimer's and dementia have access to her medication?
So why aren't you checking on her at least like once a day?
Especially no matter what. She just got back from the hospital.
Yeah, no matter what a fucking relative says. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
And like initially the investigators were like, well, why was she up on the third floor? And I wanted to be like, I've worked in several nursing homes. I'm an EMT, so I've been to several nursing homes. They put the dementia ward up off the ground because it's like, if they get to an exit door,
so they don't wander off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think it's weird that she had like balcony access though with Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yeah. I guess that that's as weird as her having access to her medication, though.
Yeah. Especially like, something like Ambien.
Yeah.
I mean, that genuinely can fuck you up. She shouldn't have access to any medication if she has dementia.
I mean, like, even Tylenol, she's like,
right.
Oh, forgetful. I took one.
Yeah.
5 minutes later, oh, I need a Tylenol.
I thought you were going to say that she died in her sleep or something, and we were going to find out that she had too much medication in her system, but, like, falling from the balcony. That Pam is such a...
To her own mother, too.
So, yes!
It's just interesting that Pam was telling investigators that she if she wanted insurance money, she's the beneficiary to her mom's policy.
Do you think when she said that out loud in her head, she was like, you know what? That's a great point I'm making.
No, I don't think she has an internal monologue like that. I think she just does shit because she's Pam. And she never regrets anything.
Nope. Well, she doesn't do anything wrong, Drew.
But what Pam didn't know is that she wasn't the only beneficiary for her mom's policy.
Oh, that's annoying.
First, her mom's policy was designed to cover funeral expenses. And then the remaining money would be split amongst the children. In the end, Pam only ended up being awarded $3,589.
She killed her mom for $3,500.
So she spent
off a balcony.
Well, yeah, I was a little suspicious about that too. So I looked into it. What it turned out was that $500,000 was in investments. So like The cash payout was only $10,000, and that was split amongst the children.
What a dummy.
After Pam was charged with the murder of Louis Gumpenberger, the St. Louis County Police reopened the investigation into Shirley's death. In 2017, an investigative news outlet team teamed up with a structural engineer named Eric Marlinghaus to test a similar railing. They tested the accident theory, simulating if Shirley fell backwards over the railing as well as tripped and fell into the railing headfirst. Neither simulation broke the railing. So then they simulated a run into the railing and found that if Shirley had run 9 miles per hour at the railing, it would have broken. But Shirley was 77 years old.
Weighed Ambien was really kicking in.
She weighed 218 pounds. She had arthritis, a bad back, and needed mechanical assistance to walk around. So she used a walker. So they tested another theory. They tested another theory and started kicking the vertical bars. The news outlet team did make a disclosure that they could not account for every variable, including railing age, quality of installation, history of repairs, etc. But in November 2017, Mary Case, the chief medical examiner for St. Louis County, changed the manner of Shirley Newman's death from accidental to undetermined.
Nice.
I feel like I didn't specifically say it, but they found that if you kicked the vertical bars, it looked a whole lot like it. You could see like what they did here versus what was actually evidenced. Looks very similar, doesn't it? So, unfortunately, the police investigation into Shirley's fall went nowhere. There were no witnesses and no surveillance video. So, it didn't go anywhere, but the investigation is still open. So, but back to the murder trial for Louis Gumpenberger. In May 2018, it was ruled that prosecutors could not present evidence related to Shirley's death at the trial. They couldn't be like, well, look, she also did this to her mom. But in June, the judge ruled that prosecutors could present evidence related to Betsy's murder. And in August, the trial date was set for June 2019.
Yeah, you did.
So, in an effort to avoid the death penalty, Pam entered an Alford plea in June 2019. An Alford plea, also known as a best interests plea, registers a formal admission of guilt towards charges in criminal court, while the defendant simultaneously expresses their innocence toward those same charges. The point is that it affords defendants the ability to accept a plea bargain while maintaining their innocence. So what I've learned from watching Judge Judy is if you take a plea bargain, usually they come along with a clause where the defendant has to admit in court what they did and confirm that they are guilty of that crime. The Alford plea would allow Pam to make a deal, but she wouldn't have to admit her guilt.
Is that like pleading no contest? Is that a similar thing?
That's how I always feel like pleading no contest is... Hold on.
That's what I always imagine it being, but I don't actually know why.
No contest plea means the defendants refuse to admit guilt, but accept punishment as if guilty, and is often offered as a part of a plea bargain.
Maybe then. Compare it to an Alford plea. I'm going to keep going. Around the same time, Lincoln County prosecuting attorney Mike Wood... It's not Leah anymore.
Oh, interesting.
Side note, they are the same thing.
Okay, so you're right. He announced that he'd be reopening Betsy Faria's homicide investigation. In August 2019, Pamela Hupp was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for Louis Gumpenberger's murder. She claimed she pleaded guilty to spare her family from having to go through an ugly trial.
It wouldn't have been ugly. It would have been beautiful.
Well, it would have been ugly because she would have had to lie the whole time. In October 2019, Lewis's mother, Margaret Birch, filed a wrongful death lawsuit as well as fraud and misrepresentation against Pam. In July 2020, she was awarded $3 million. So Pam owes her $3 million. Since then, they've garnished Pam's prison trust account, gaining her COVID relief check, as well as money Pam had earned working as a tutor in the prison. They'd only gotten like $300, but it was more than they were expecting. And they were just like happy to take whatever Pam had. Which I get. In September 2020, Pam's husband filed for divorce, and it was finalized in March 2022. He didn't want to stick around.
If they can't make it, who can?
Can't believe he stayed after all the Betsy trial stuff.
Well, so here's something I just want to show you real quick. My little, like, collage of Pam earlier. One of them, when she's with Mark, is her, like, leaving an interview with police after, like, having killed Lewis Guppenberger. This one?
Oh.
She's smiling for the cameras, and he is just, like, he looks so stressed.
He looks like, I cannot believe I'm here again.
Mm-hmm.
This like, bitch keeps killing people.
The new investigation into Betsy's murder was a little derailed due to COVID, but on July 12, 2021, Pam Hupp was charged with first-degree murder of Elizabeth Betsy Faria.
Yes.
Prosecutor Mike Wood stated that he'd be seeking the death penalty for the heinousness and depravity of the crime. The prosecution alleged that Pam stabbed Betsy while she was asleep on the couch in a weakened state following her chemotherapy treatment. In the court documents, a new piece of evidence was revealed. Are you ready for the new piece?
Yes.
Pam's cell phone records showed she had been in the vicinity of the Faria house for up to 30 minutes after the time she claimed she had dropped Pam off, or Betsy off.
I'm going home.
Wood also stated that he would be investigating potential prosecutorial misconduct in the original murder investigation, stating it had been mismanaged from the beginning and driven by confirmation bias against Russ.
Mm-hmm.
He suggested that the actions by investigators and prosecutors concerned could constitute gross negligence or a calculated criminal behavior. So Pam pleaded not guilty in July 2021. A preliminary hearing was scheduled for February 2022, but was delayed because Pam's public defender died of a heart attack.
Are they probably sure? Because
he was so stressed.
I was going to say, had to defend like, her. Well, I'm more on board with Lacey. Like, are we sure?
I mean, that's...
In August, Pam waived her right to a preliminary hearing. There was some back and forth about the venue due to the extensive media coverage of the case. Currently, the prosecutor's office expects the trial to take place in the summer of 2025.
Oh. And actually, we'll have an update at some point.
Just a few months ago, Pam's attorneys filed a request with prosecutors to share DNA evidence with them they believe will prove she didn't murder Betsy. One of Hupp's attorneys said DNA found at the murder scene does not match Hupp, but instead matches an unidentified male, a claim a prosecutor's dispute. In the meantime, Pam is serving her life sentence for the murder of Lewis Guppenberger at Chillicothe Correctional Center. I'm sure you're curious what happened with the detectives and Prosecutor Lee or Askey.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'd be curious. So, Detective Mike Merkel was the one who testified during Russ's first trial, claiming that the photos had been lost,
mm-hmm.
but definitely proved Russ was the murderer. That's him. He's the only male in this little collage.
Yeah.
That's Mike Merkle. When the pictures were found, it was proven he had lied on stand. So currently, former detective Mike Merkle has found himself in a good bit of legal trouble.
Nice.
Okay.
When the new prosecutor, Mike Wood, took over, he commissioned Undersheriff Randy Lambert to begin investigating the law enforcement officers involved in the original investigation. Lambert,
Is this Leah's new husband?
No. Mike Wood is the new prosecutor. Okay. He took Leah's job.
Gotcha.
Thank God.
So, Randy Lambert is investigating law enforcement officers. Lambert began receiving texts from Mr. Merkle and his wife, who happened to be a crime scene technician. Her name was Becky. The text informed Lambert that the Merkles were following him and they had incriminating information on him. Quote, "I have video of you drinking and getting into your county car. We are watching you closely. You should stop throwing stones at glass houses or yours will come down first and fast."
Some people are so stupid.
Mike's brother, Kevin, who was an employee of the DEA at the time, allegedly used his government-issued phone to deliver the threatening messages through a secret burner app. All three Merkles currently face felony charges of stalking and harassing a law enforcement officer. The most recent update regarding those three was November of last year, so I don't know what's happening with them, but that's what's up. Leah Askey, she's the brunette, got married and is going by Leah Cheney now. In 2018, she lost her re-election campaign to Mike Wood, who, as we know, took over as the prosecuting attorney of Lincoln County. In 2019, she founded the Cheney Law Group and is now focusing on family law, criminal defense, and expungement. Speaking about the murder case against Russ, she regretted ever running for prosecuting attorney, but she didn't regret how she handled the case. She claimed that it was a very difficult time being a female in a position of power.
Don't do that.
She also mentioned that at the same time, she was going through a divorce, so...
Then excuse yourself from the case.
Also, in January 2017, the Missouri Supreme Court ordered Judge Menemeyer to serve a 6-month unpaid suspension for violating judicial misconduct rules. It was unrelated to the Faria case, but I feel it's still worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
Her suspension began in February of 2017, so it's over, but like she's still working as a judge, but.
Nice.
Pattern. The money Pam was awarded from Betsy's life insurance policy in response to Betsy's daughter suing Pam for it, a judge ruled that Pam was to keep the money. The documents were all signed by Betsy, naming Pam as the beneficiary. There wasn't anything the judge could do. While being questioned about Louis Gumpenberger's murder in 2016, Pam told detectives that she still had the money. She didn't spend it all. 3 days later, an evidence photo indicates Pam gave the money to her son. A handwritten note said Pam's then-business, H2 Powers LLC, is giving Travis Victor Hupp a loan in the amount of $122,574.84, interest to be paid at the rate of $5 a year. Missouri Secretary of State records show that the business, H2 Partners LLC, only exists in Hupp's ex-husband's name, which makes the money impossible to garnish under the $3 million judgment. So, like, she gifted her money to the business, and then the business gifted it to her son. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer hers, so they can't take it back.
Sneaky bitch.
Yeah. Following Russ's exoneration, both of Betsy's daughters spoke to Fox 2 News In 2021, Leah and Mariah said that not only had the former prosecutor, but also Lincoln County investigators told them Russ was the only possible killer. They said that when they suggested Pam Hupp might be a suspect, they were told she physically could not do that. Which, really? At the time, they felt that not only did they lose their mom, but they lost both their parents.
Yeah.
During this interview, they reported that shortly after Russ was exonerated, a handwritten letter showed up at the restaurant where they worked. Their boss brought it over, and all their coworkers were reading it. It was anonymous, and they thought Russ was behind it. They described it as a very hateful letter filled with really mean things, and it was made to sound like it was from someone affiliated with Russ. Looking back, both daughters are sure it was sent from Pam Hupp. So, like, Pam, leave them alone. Jesus.
Right.
Like, stop.
She's really obsessed with the whole family.
Oh, my God. Leah and Mariah's relationship with Russ is strained now. Betsy's daughter, Mariah, and Betsy's mother, Janet, both have spoken out against the TV series about Pam Hupp. They say that so much was incorrect in the series, they lost count. Janet said that in the TV series, it portrays Betsy and her mother having a last goodbye. That did not happen, and it's heartbreaking for Janet to see that made up. You know, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Mariah wants to remind people not to forget the victims. Going along with that, I just want to note that when you Google Betsy Faria, the first thing that pops up is the Wikipedia page for Pam Hupp.
Yeah.
Which I hate. Mariah gave birth to a baby girl whom she named Elizabeth Kay after her mom in March 2022. And I'm just going to end on a little fun fact. Apparently, Russ has gotten remarried. Hmm. Are you wondering to who? Do you remember Carol Alford?
I don't remember who she was.
She's the woman that Pam
that almost
tried
got
to...
in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
She's now Carol Correa.
That's weird.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts?
What a weird connection.
Well, not they met because of what happened.
I'm sure, but it's still weird. Do you think they're ever like, man, we wouldn't have met if
yes,
this
they
crazy
talk
bitch
about
hadn't murdered
they're doing
my
an interview
wife.
Right here. Mm-hmm. And they were like, the only good thing that came out of this was I met this lady.
I understand the strained relationship between him and Betsy's daughters.
Yeah.
It made me a little bit sad when you said it. But yeah. I can see why, and I probably was already before this, but I can see why this also would make them be like, what the fuck, Russ?
Well, yeah.
Well, I hope he's happy. He deserves happiness more than Pam does.
Everybody seems very happy. And this is one of those cases where we'll update you when things come out, but even if, for whatever reason, Pam gets out of this, she's still serving life without parole, so.
Yeah.
Babooch.
So that's something.
Any comments, Bale?
No.
Okay. Well, that was sinister.
We were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.
Fuck off, Pam.